Hi, this is Todd Duncan, and I want to welcome you to Insight Now, the monthly audio series brought to you by Prospect Mortgage, where you have a chance to learn from thought leaders and best-selling authors the success strategies that will enhance your business and your life. This month, it's my pleasure to spend some time with Robert Stover. I know Robert personally, have done a lot of work with him, and over the last 20 years, he's worked on really helping companies with marketing and strategy, and those companies have been as varied as Procter & Gamble, Investors Business Daily, Staples, and he's worked with marketing guru Jay Abraham and also a good friend of mine, Dave Savage, at Mortgage Coach, as well as a number of leading real estate and mortgage thought leaders and speakers. He shares insights that he's learned through all of his career in his brand new book, Strategy Matters. And we have Robert with us today. How are you?
Todd, I'm doing great.
Good. It's really good to have you on board. I'm intrigued by the book. I love the fact that strategy and matters come together so much. And I think, unfortunately, most people don't understand the value of strategy, and they don't understand that it really does matter. So I can't wait to get into this with you, and I know it'll be very insightful for our listeners. So let's talk. We always kind of talk on almost every interview in terms of the central kind of why, and you know, we talk about why strategy, and we talk about really maybe the symptoms that a company can expect to have, or an individual. We have a lot of real estate agents and a lot of, you know, individual business owners on this call. What can they expect to have, you know, happen if they have a strategy problem in their business?
A couple things. First of all, a lot of chaos and overload.
Yeah.
You know, right now the market's shifting. It's going social media. It's going this way. Old media are stopping to work. Old methods aren't working. Everything seems to be in flux and change, and so everybody kind of has their mouth on the fire hose and is trying everything at once, and yet they're not seeing results. So if you're having a lot of chaos, frustration, and lack of results, there's a good chance you've got a strategy issue going on that's beyond just your marketing media.
Yeah, and I think today, I mean, there's a ton of, I mean, competition is fierce. You know, it's survival of the fittest right now. You know, I think that you and I both agree that a lot of people are working extremely hard, and they're not getting, you know, the same kind of payoff. But you also talk about the fact that if people, you know, aren't moving from where they want to be, and or they kind of hate where they're at, then that can also be fixed by creating strategy, I would suppose, right?
Absolutely, because ultimately strategy has to be fit like a glove for you. A lot of folks out there suffer from strategy envy. You're looking at what your neighbor's doing, what somebody else in the industry is doing, what another business is doing, going, oh, if I only had what they had. When the truth is, your strategy has to fit you, or it's not going to work. And so every strategy is unique. And so if somebody's really hating what they're doing, it's a good sign that they need to shift their strategy into something like more. Something that you see a lot are people that, say a realtor, cares for his or her clients, works their tail off for them, does a great job servicing, delivering, and yet they look across the street and there's a realtor that really doesn't care, that's just kicking their tail in the market. And so if you're really working hard, you think you're doing your best, and you're trying to provide high trust and high service, and you're still getting your tail kicked by people that are in it for the money, don't deliver good service and things like that, you probably have a strategy problem.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. Well, yeah. You know, and I don't know, I mean, from my perspective, a lot of people in the kind of the demo and socioeconomic graphic that we're hitting right now on this interview, maybe haven't made the transition from, you know, being a person who's in business to really being a business, you know, leader. And I know that typically if that's not done, there are these like common substitutes. And so what are the common substitutes that business leaders use to solve these problems instead of reflecting on strategy?
Number one is substituting business for busyness or busyness for business. You just start working harder and harder and harder as you go. It's kind of like the duck's calm on the surface and below its legs are paddling away. And if things start not to go right, you see some really common behaviors. And, you know, as I work with companies and things, and it's flailing. And they just try more and more and more. Right now, there's probably realtors that are or businesses or whatever, oh crud, everything isn't going right. I've got to put up a Facebook page. I've got to do a blog. I've got to do Twitter. I've got to do social media. I've got to do networking events. I've got to do, and they just do more and more and more and more and more, and it just doesn't go right.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of really hard work that goes nowhere. You see substitutes, for example, I know in the mortgage industry for a while, a lot of the guys are throwing flat screens up in their conference rooms. All that, I've got to do that because everybody else is doing that. So you see a lot of what do you call it, tactical focus, really small things that you can control that absolutely do no good to move you to where you want to go.
Yeah, fascinating. It's the copycat mentality, right?
Yes.
In a lot of cases, yeah.
Well,
in what role does, I'm sorry, what role does like fear play in all this, or freezing up, or just getting kind of locked down and not doing anything?
You know, let's do it, be honest. I've been at places in my business life when, as they say, the fit hits the shan, and you freeze. You don't know what to do. Everything that you thought you know would work isn't. You don't know where to go next. Things aren't working. And so you can have a tendency, and I see this a lot in businesses, is they just kind of hole up, curl up in a ball on the couch. They just freeze. You know, you see it a lot on in the freeway and accidents and disasters. When it hits, people just, it's an instinct to just freeze up. You know, you see the drowning victim, the panic, the flailing. A lot of effort. And, you know, I don't want to, because there's probably folks on this call and businesses listening to this call where things are really tough, and I don't want to under, what do you call it, soft soap that. Yeah. It's very real. It doesn't feel good. And, but man, you've got to fight that tendency to freeze and not do anything.
And so, you know, taking action and moving from, you know, kind of that frozen zone to, you know, at least getting yourself going. I remember a quote that came in from Jerome Butler, who was a Harvard psychologist, and one of the things that he said is that you're more likely to act your way into feeling than feeling your way into acting. And so people that are, you know, a little bit rudderless, that are working hard and are, you know, reflective of these problematic issues where they're just, you know, they're not getting the ROI, they're not getting the results, they're, you know, afraid and freezing up, they've got to take action. And so when we think about that, what are the payoffs if somebody starts, you know, given these kind of realities, what are the payoffs if somebody starts creating and being interested in strategic planning as a concept? What are some of the stories you've seen, and how have businesses and individuals been changed?
Strategy is really amazing in its ability to take your existing small little resources and leverage them beyond things you can even think possible. There's some pretty mind-blowing ones. I worked with a real estate training guru. He was at the $7 million range, and you know, we took a look at his we'll talk about his a little later the TAF, who he targets and approaches, and what his proposition is. And we changed his proposition and what his offer was. And he went from 7 to 25 million in 2 years. Same audience, same number of employees. But that was a pretty big jump from just a strategy difference. Maybe something everybody can relate to right now, just because of all the news and the buzz around it, is Apple. A friend of mine, you may know him, John Kirker, he sent me a thing and goes, dude, Apple stock, and he did the Google financials on it. He goes, Apple stock compared to gold, Apple stock outperformed the gold market the last 5 years.
Right.
So ideas are more valuable than gold. And you think, well, that's Apple, I can't do it, but you can do it. I've got another client, just a little local psychiatrist, and we just shifted how he approached his market. He'd never ever done any, you know, in that world. It's all professional referral. And we stepped outside of that for him, just did a simple AdWords campaign. And he did more business in the worst market ever when other psychologists were starving. He did more business in that year than any year previously in his 25 years. Mm. Just a small little change, but it was something that nobody else around him was doing.
Right.
But he again, it's an old marketing guru used to say, there's you learn more through movement than meditation. So while you don't want to fail, you do have to take action. And you do have to try new things. And often when you take a look and you get strategic, the leverage and the growth you can have is amazing. I know a contractor, a contracting supplier, and he would do a bid process. It would take him about 15 hours to bid on 300 to 400 items for a project. And then what people were doing, the contractors, is they take his bid and go take it to everybody else. He got into, we're going to talk later, the emphasis on advisors, he got into a peer group, and they went, oh, here's how you fix that. And they showed him how you charge a 1% or 2% fee if they want the actual itemized SKU numbers. And it's an extra 1% to 2% fee. Ended it cold, and he's up, you know, revenue-wise about 20%.
Yeah.
Simple thing, got outside, got some advice, got some counsel, and a small thing, but a very big thing in his business.
Yeah. Obviously we start to see the breakthroughs here, and I know through our time together we're going to go through just kind of conditions and mistakes so that we can get people kind of equipped to move forward the right way like you're talking about right here. But let's shift to conditions that prevent people from, you know, really crafting a winning strategy. And, you know, one of the things that I like is your question is working on your strategy in isolation a problem? And I think you started to mention that in the previous answer, and we need to go deep on this one. So what do you think about that? Is it an isolation problem?
Oh, absolutely. And Todd, before we got going on the call, I told you, there's in the day in the last 20 years that I haven't studied up on strategy, business, marketing. So, you know, I think I'm a smart bear. With the launch of this book, I stepped out of my known zone, and all of a sudden I realized I got to get some advisors. I do not know what's going on in this chunk of the world.
Right.
You know, I know the principles and stuff, but there's techniques and things like that. How long would it take me to learn all that stuff if I didn't, say, contact somebody like yourself and others with vast experience in publishing? It would be I'm in for a lifetime of trial and error.
And
whatever problem you have right now, there's probably somebody that's a phone call away that has the answer.
One of my friends wrote a book called The Power of Who, and we interviewed him earlier, Bob Bodine, and you know, the interesting thing about his book was not really The Power of Who as a title, but it was a subtitle. And the subtitle simply stated, you already know everybody you need to know. And I think that kind of points to the point you just made that, you know, in many cases, somebody that can help you either is a phone call away, or that person that you call knows somebody that can help you. And I think the major point to make for people is that, you know, you got to be careful. You got to balance how many advisors you get, because, you know, over ideation can also confuse and cause paralysis. But at the same time, you know, you need more than one, because you need to make sure that you kind of have a balanced approach to this. What have you learned in your career by, you know, having leaders and peers and advisors and counselors? And what would you say to people that are searching for one?
Well, the first thing is get one,
yeah,
or get two, or get three. You just have to. And whether that's a formal coaching program, whether that's you do a strategic retreat and bring in outside advisors, whether it's going to like some of the programs that you offer, building champions, YPO, peer groups. You need a variety of counselors with outside insight and perspective that you don't have. The thing is, you don't know what you don't know. And so, it's like a student wants to go in and learn martial arts. Well, the truth is, all martial arts are not created equal.
Right.
So if you're a beginner, how do you know which one to take and which one's good or not based on your needs? Well, usually what happens is they go in and try this one, and they go in and try that one, and they have to bounce around. They don't know what they don't know. And somebody has to come alongside and point out what they should do. You know, I use financial advisors because there's a heck of a lot about that. I haven't spent every day of my life focused on the markets. There are things that would absolutely blindside me without advisors.
Right.
So, then ironically, when you do get, like you mentioned, over ideation, the fact is when you do get many advisors, or several or three, they don't all agree.
Right.
So advisors don't excuse you from decision making. You still have to make some hard decisions. But at least now you know what you don't know. And
used to talk, yeah, and used to talk about, you know, problematic to this, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but people in isolation tend to be a little bit myopic, and when you marry a kind of myopic viewpoint of your world, and maybe you're only, you know, comparing to your industry, and you're, you know, either better than, worse than, you know, kind of average. When you start thinking about different businesses and different, you know, ideas that come from different populations and different types of genres in business, you marry that up with spending time strategically planning, and it becomes kind of a discipline and an art. And when you pull in an idea or pull in a thought that isn't even being considered in your industry, you not only kind of launch movement, but you might be setting yourself up for legacy. You've worked with a lot of people. What is the typical daily plan for strategic planning? Is it a daily thing? Is it a retreat? What have you found to be, there's two things. What have you found to be the best kind of approach to strategic planning? And then what are the advantages of having a formal strategic planning process?
Well, strategic planning used to be the, you go away, you do your five-year plan, and you come back and work it. Welcome to the year 2010, 2011. Now you should probably at least be doing a formal, serious planning process once a year, and then monitoring it on a monthly basis. Things, markets are just changing so fast. Let's say you're in the mobile, your mobile marketing, just radically changing market, almost on a weekly basis. New technologies are flying in and blindsiding people. Banking, mortgage, real estate. I mean, it's just changing so fast. And we'll talk about later the importance of monitoring. You just got to be on top of it. Strategic planning doesn't mean that a lot of people look at it like it was, oh, I have a strategic plan, it will work. Well, maybe not. You have to test it. You have to go forward. A strategy is a hypothesis. It's your hypothesis. It's your best guess on what will work given this market, these conditions, your resources, and your objectives. But with so many things changing, with so many things coming into whatever industry you're in from out of the blue, you just have to constantly be monitoring it and adjusting to what's happening on the ground. So did that answer your question?
Yeah. No, it's good. And so I think that, you know, I heard what you said just now, and I was talking with some people yesterday, and we were talking about strategy, but we were also talking about the formality of backing strategy with, you know, with a plan, and we were commenting on business planning and how many people either A, don't do it, or they try to, you know, plan an element of their business without an overarching strategy. And the interesting thing that was brought up, and this wouldn't be new to you, is that, you know, so oftentimes creating a plan ends up being a one-time event that isn't monitored, you know, through the year, isn't checked out. And people were laughing when I was saying this yesterday, because they, you know, a lot of people are entering the planning process. They're, you know, planning for the next quarter or planning for the next year. And then they don't pay attention to the plan. They don't look at it every day. They don't, you know, they don't revisit it and make adjustments. And as we switch into in our interview, the mistakes that people make around strategy, you know, one of the top things has to be, you know, not making it a daily discipline. And I know we'll talk about that. But how important is it to know? Because this is all about moving you from where you are, right, to where you want to be. How important is it, you know, for you to know where you are now in relation to where you want to be? And what do you suggest to people about reality checks? And I know you have some questions for situational analysis that I'd like to get into here. So what do you suggest there? How important is it for people to know where they are in relation to where they want to be?
It's very important. If you don't know where you're at, how can you even start where you're going? And it's like a navigation. If I'm sailing, I have to know where I'm at to get where I'm going, is a reference point. And where you're at is reality. And a lot of times with goal setting and vision process, it turns into a fantasy process. And there's always going to be a tension between thinking big and thinking too small. But there is such a thing as reality. If I right now wanted to move into surgery, be a surgeon, and I'm going to set a goal to do it next year. Well, I'm going to fail.
Right.
I haven't done 4 years of biochemistry. I haven't done a residency. They just don't turn people into surgeons in 1 year. So there has to be a realisticness to your planning. And knowing where you're at helps bring some of that realism in. But a formula I use is called FASTScan. It's easy enough, even I can remember it. And it starts off with pretty much all strategic planning is kind of, you know, in theory, strategic planning should be done in good times and bad times and whatever. In reality, usually when I get called in on the strategic planning process, things aren't going so well. And so that's the best place to start it. Either you or your team, what are the frustrations in the business? Are you not making sales? Is revenue where you're at? Not where you want. Is growth not going where you want? You know, what are the major frustrations that you have in the business? That's the F. The A, adversaries. Who are your competitors? What are the major adversaries you're facing in your industry or market? Is it stuff that's coming in from the outside? Is it the internet's replacing the old order? You know, what are the adversaries that you're facing? Really important is the next S, segments. Who are your markets? And here I suggest doing an 80-20 on who your best and worst customers are. It's just stunning. I can't tell you how many times. It's just the simplest tool. And, you know, out of 100% of my clients, 80% of your revenue is probably going to come from 20%. Yet if you go into most businesses and ask them what's your top 20%, they don't know.
Right.
I just sat with somebody the other day, and he's going, oh, you know, my business comes from everywhere. Well, let's take a look at that. Well, no, you know, it's this and this and that. Well, let's take a little closer look at that assumption. Well, I guess it comes from these people. Oh, wow. And one major dominant group that he was not focusing on was bringing all of his revenue. I was working with a medical billings company, and we did a simple 80-20, and it was more like a 99-1. All of their money and effort was going to one segment of the market. All of their business was coming from referrals from CPAs and lawyers. So a complete misappropriation of effort and finances.
Right.
So knowing your segments is just so important. Next, in FAST, the T, trends. What the heck's going on with the economy? What's going on with technology? What's going on with major demographic shifts? It's kind of just stepping back and taking a look at the what is the environment I'm doing business in and where are the balls bouncing? Next, in scan, is sums. And this is different for everybody. This is what are your numbers? What are your most important numbers to be keeping an eye on given the market and where you're at? And again, every business will come up with a different answer on that. Competencies. There's two things here. Competencies is what are you good at? And often what you're doing, you're not good at. And you need to be doing more of what you're actually good at. And, I mean, I've faced this a couple times in my career in life where I take a look and go, wow, I'm spending a lot of time in areas I'm not that great at. And I need to shift it more towards where my competencies lie. And every business has core competencies. And you need to know what those are. And if you're trying to make strategic decisions, if you're trying to create visions and you're not clear on what your competencies are, you're pretty much setting yourself up for failure. Assumptions. All planning is based on assumptions. You know, we think there's going to be a tomorrow. We think the market's going to go up or down. We think we got a pretty good shot at it or not, probabilities. So what are your assumptions? Let's make them public. Usually, they're kind of like the elephant in the room that nobody talks about, and they're unconscious. So in your planning process, just what are your assumptions about your market, your customers, your future, and where the ball is bouncing? Next, I cheated on scan as N for enjoy, and
I
that's
like
your
that.
Passion. You got to cheat. So where's your passion at? I can't tell you the number of times I go in and working with companies, and often the opportunities lie in one area, but their passions lie in another area. Now, the thing about passions is they're dangerous. We see major corporations, was it Time Warner AOL?
Right.
Passions of the CEO, and he drives this major acquisition that blows up. That is not what they should have been doing strategically. It's not where their competencies were. It's not where their knowledge base was. It's not where their skills were. But it's where the CEO's passion was, and it completely blew up. Then take a Steve Jobs. Where are his passions? And it's driving one of the most successful businesses right now. I mean, they're going to screw up, but for right now,
it doesn't look like it.
For right now, they're golden. Anyway, the thing is, so passion, they're the fuel. They really are. And you got to know what they are. And you either have to know that, okay, I'm passionate about this, but you know what? All the facts are showing that's not where the market or where we should go is.
Right.
Or you got to look at it and go, I've got two opportunities, and one I'm passionate about and one I'm not. And if you're and usually organizations, this isn't just individuals, usually it's the CEO, but often an entire organization's passion will lie in one direction. So you have to know what that is and how it's either skewing or fueling your strategic process.
I remember
so those are,
yeah,
oh,
sorry,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to comment. I'm sorry, I was going to comment that I remember, in Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, one of the points he made is that you really do have to marry up. If you married up your number one competency and you determined if it could drive your economic engine and you were passionate about that one thing, that was like the magic alchemy of implementation and successful strategic, rollouts. And I thought that was, that's what you're saying right now. You marry competency with passion. And make it economically viable, and there's like no stopping you. That's what Steve Jobs has done at Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he was the right place, the right time, and he put it all together. And we all know the artist is passionate about what they do, but it's never going to be economic.
Right.
But if you're running a business, it must be economic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, unless you're a 503C, right?
Yeah, exactly. And even then, you better have an eye on donors.
Exactly. That's the other thing, too. The 80-20 rule applies everywhere. It applies to not-for-profits. It applies to profits. It applies to individuals and teams and everything, yeah.
Yeah, we'll circle back on that at the end is, the one thing. But that is definitely up there. It's probably one of the easiest strategic tools and to guide thinking that exist.
Right.
And it's available to massive corporations and to down to an individual realtor.
Right. Let's shift gears. I know one of the things you're passionate about is this TAP model, and there's three elements that everybody that's listening, if they want to formulate a business strategy for their real estate practice or mortgage practice or whatever they're doing in their business life, you have this interesting model that I think is pretty pretty significant. Why don't you roll us into what you call TAP?
Okay, yeah, whether you're a billion-dollar company or a sole proprietor, at the end of the day, no matter what your passion and what your vision or goal is, you have to answer three questions. And one is, who's my target? And that might be a lot of people, that might be a few people, that might be a lot of segments, a few segments. But who's my target? Number two is my approach to them. That may be through many channels, it might be through one channel. But you still have to answer, what is my approach to them? And then the other one is, what's my proposition? Now, I know in theory I should be saying, what's my product? But I use the word proposition because often we can take a product and add to it in a way. We can add offers to it. If you're a realtor, you can, I sell homes. I sell them fast and sell them good, and that's my proposition. Well, you could pick them up in a limo. If you're a mortgage, you could offer to redo the loan at no cost. So you can add things to the core service or product that greatly enhance, guarantees, all sorts of stuff that you can add on to that core product to make it a far more appealing product. Now, if you have a TAP, and you do have one, you may not know what it is, but every either sole proprietor, realtor, business owner, multinational company, they have a TAP. If their TAP identically lines up with their competition's TAP, if you're a realtor in Orange County and you come up with the same answer on who your target is, how you approach them, and what your proposition is, you're in for death spiral competition.
Yeah.
So, in the book I illustrate, I have two triangles kind of facing each other to illustrate matching TAP. And that creates head-to-head price grinding kind of competition. So you have to start altering different elements. Who do I target? If I'm a realtor, I want to accelerate or excel in single family homes or apartments. Or I love moving people from a condo into a quote unquote real home. I'm just passionate about that. I'm good at it. It's a unique market. That's where I'm going to put my focus, is on that. Well, you just shifted your tap away from all the other realtors in the market with a different target. You know, now I'm going to add in, well, you know, when I do the deliver the key to them, I have a limo pick them up with champagne in it, and I bring them to it. Okay, now you're starting to alter your approach to the market and your proposition, and whatever. So for a brainstorming tool, just write TAP, who's my target, and start going through your segments list. Am I targeting the most profitable segments? Am I going head-to-head as a business into a segment that's got a bigger, better, more funded player in it? I'm going to get creamed. So you need to segment down or niche down and find a different target to go after. What's my approach? Is it the same as every other realtor, same as every other business, same as every banking company in my industry? A great example of this I use in the book is Umpqua Bank up in the Northwest. And new CEO came in, took around, and all banks are doing business the same, all regionals. He goes, huh, well, what business are we in? And he came up with a completely different proposition, which is we're in the retail business. We're not in the banking business.
Mm.
And, well, if we're in the retail business, how do I do business? Well, first of all, I'm tearing out the counters. I'm going to put more space in. I'm going to make it friendlier to people. I'm going to stop hiring kids coming out of the banking, you know, majors. And I'm going to start hiring gap retailers and people that are very experienced at retail management. So he completely changed his TAP model and grew by millions, hundreds of millions, actually, in a seven-year period. By completely changing the game on his competitors. And, you know, Todd, I think it was 2 years ago, you did a presentation, and you'd gone out to the corner there in La Jolla, I believe, and had taken pictures of four gas stations on all four corners.
Right, right.
And you showed the price. If you're who you target and how you approach them and what you offer, your proposition, is the same as your competitors, that's what you get. And so just an easy tool is to sit down with by yourself, sit down with your team, and go, who are we targeting? Who's our competitors targeting? Can we change that? Do we want to alter that at all? How are we approaching our target? Are we doing the same marketing processes and steps and sales process that everyone else in our industry is doing? If yes, well, let's look outside of our industry. Let's bring in outside experts. How can we change it up? How can we modify the process? How can we make the process of onboarding people a value in and of itself? Let's take a look at our proposition. Are we offering just the core widget, or are we offering the widget plus some service? Are we offering the widget plus service plus a guarantee plus some other perks?
Right.
And start brainstorming through those things. So it's a core strategic. Those are the three questions you have to answer. You know, once you kind of go, here's where I'm going and here's the business I'm in, you have to come up with, who is my target? You know, is it a few people, a lot of people? What's my approach? Am I going to use a single approach or many approaches? And what's my offer, proposition? And is it just a core offer, or can I offer plus it? Can I add service into it?
Yeah.
Can I do other things? And it doesn't cost a lot often to perk up an offer or a proposition.
Well, and it's really, I mean, it's, and what you're talking about here, I think, is even a change, you know, where years ago you and I were talking about just the whole idea of how fresh being in the value adding business is. And there are so many people today that now use that as a positioning statement, but aren't really adding value. And so kind of the new thing is what's your value integration package, and how is it strategical, and how is it, you know, how is it tactical? I remember one guy decided that he was going to totally specialize in working with relocation buyers. And so he launched a program called the Mortgage Bus, and I think you were at Mastery when he was talking about how differentiated he was, where he literally was picking people up at the airport, and he was getting them into his Mortgage Bus, which had flat screen TVs with live internet connection. He had already pulled, you know, the 5 to 10 properties that they wanted to look at as a result of all the pre-work that was done. And so they're driving through neighborhoods in the Mortgage Bus, looking at the houses on the flat screen first, and then stopping at the ones that they wanted to, or calling them immediately and scheduling a, you know, a showing. And it was just amazing how tactically and strategically different that was, unique. And he had these 10 things that were just part of his value integration package. And he dominated that space and radicalized the whole notion of, you know, referral by design kind of business management. And more people relocating to key areas were telling all their friends who were relocating, and he built a solid business, not to mention the fact that he then became highly sought after by real estate agents because he had all the buyers.
It was perfect. Yeah, and that's called spending imagination, not money.
Right.
I mean, you know, how much did the flat screen cost versus to run ads in the paper, to run direct mail, or to run AdWords or whatever else you're doing? It's the expense wasn't, to compare to the results gotten, was minimal. It was a huge ROI. And so a lot of times, you know, right now things are economically tough. But by bringing imagination into it, like you just go through this TAP model and let your imagination run, you can really change the game on your competitors in your industry.
Right. Let's end up with two questions. One is, what do you see as the biggest tactical mistakes that people make when they are implementing a strategy?
Number one, and everybody sees this coming, is lack of execution. Mm. You know people that you've coached to work on their business plans and go away, and you check up on them a month or 2 months or 3 months later, and, well, you know, it's gathering dust in the thing, and they've never done anything on it. And there are going to be two reasons for that. One, it wasn't a realistic plan, and the other one is just, you know, inaction.
Right.
And in this market, inaction will kill you. You just must execute. The counter to that is executing everything all at once. You can't do that either. But you must take action. So that would be the absolute number one tactical error. Number two is measuring what's happening. A lot of companies come up with a plan, they execute, and this is what they do, and they confuse the tactic with being strategic. And they start existing for the tactic, and they don't measure it to ever know if it's working or not. I know companies that the way they market was doing a quarterly white paper. Pretty soon, they never measured the results they got off it. They never measured who converted into clients or didn't. We went in and took a hard analysis look at them, and not one customer in 2 years had come from that strategy or tactic that they were doing. Yet they were dumping in, I think it was $14,000 every time they did one, with no results. And so monitoring the results, and you really got to get serious about it. I know with a lot of things, branding or whatever else, or a lot of social media right now, they go, well, you can't measure it. Well, you can, and you must. And they figured out 100 years ago how to do some of this stuff. So in this day and age, you must find a way to measure what you're doing for results.
I think that's fantastic. So major stuff, the book is phenomenal. I'm going to recommend that all of our listeners pick up a copy of it. Click on the link and make sure you get Strategy Matters. It's going to be a very powerful, I believe, life and business transforming book for you. What are you hoping to have people, not only from this call, Robert, but from reading the book, what are like the top three or four takeaways of people you can pretty much guarantee you're going to get from the philosophy and the content of this great book and, you know, all the years that you've spent helping people design strategy?
What I've tried to do is strategy. I mean, say strategy, and people go, "Yeah, it's important," and their eyes roll over. And if you've taken a look at some of the books out there on strategy, they're 400 plus pages, and it's like, my word, people. If something's difficult, you're not going to do it. So what I've tried to do is take the most important principles from strategy and make it accessible. I've broken almost all the things you can do strategically down into a who's your target, what's your approach, what's your proposition. Very easy things to think through, and it's a very easy process to go through. You can do it as a retreat. You can do it as an individual. You can do it as a company.
Right.
So first of all, I try to make the strategy. It's just so I say in the book, strategy is too important to be made difficult. I'd rather have somebody sit down with a napkin and their managers for an hour just focused on the business than not do anything.
Right.
So that's probably one of the takeaways for the book. Takeaway from this call, I really want people to get advisors.
Yeah.
Whether you get the book or not, get an advisor. Get two advisors. Get one from your industry, one outside your industry.
Smart.
You know, it brings in accountability. It brings in ideas and thoughts that you've never had before. It can shave years off your process. So I'm pretty passionate about that. Make time for strategy. Like you said, you like to do a daily monitoring, daily strategic thinking. I like to give people at least monthly, taking a serious look at where they are strategically, what's happening, what's working, what's not working. But you just got to take time. I do an informal interview of people and where they do the strategic planning. With most business owners, and I'm not kidding, the answer is in the shower or driving to work. That is not strategic thinking. You might get some great ideas, but it's not a formal process that you work through. The next, focus and concentration are at the heart of strategy. I think, Todd, 15 years we talked ago, you brought up, I think it was Chenault of the Flying Tigers.
Yeah.
And he told us, guys, forget one-to-one dogfights. Two of you on one, no matter what's happening behind you. And so they would put two guys on one. And that concentration at the point of weakness created just one of the most incredible fighter victories ever.
Well, yeah, it was crazy.
So in your business, you've got to focus. And hopefully the book brings that to them. But even if you never get to it in this call, take a look at everything you're focusing and go, what can I cut? And you'll actually give it more power with your business.
Reminds me of that Chinese proverb, if you chase two rabbits, both will escape.
Yes, exactly. Very good. I might borrow that. Yeah. And then just do it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I try to make it as easy as possible for somebody to bring the power of strategy into their business. I know, daily try and help people bring the power of business planning and strategy into their business. But you just have to do it. You have to make time for it. Is that critical to your success?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been a valuable 45 minutes, and I could go on, and I know there's much more that you have to offer, but I would just remind everybody to understand the importance of the question, do you have strategy, is it working, and if you don't, how much longer are you going to wait to have one? And in today's business, strategy does really matter, and that's why I love the title of this book. And Robert, I want to thank you for spending 45 minutes of your life with us, and I know you've made a difference in the lives of the people that have listened to this, and so I am very excited about the success of your book, and just want to thank you for being online today. It was great.
All right, and thank you for the interview, Todd. Very
much. Welcome.
Appreciate this.
Everybody take action on this and click on the link, grab the book, and until next month when we do another edition of Insight Now, I wish you successful implementation, and we thank you for listening. Bye-bye.